Blog Talk Radio.
You know, sure, I would have heard a goat by now.
Yeah.
I could save time in a bottle. I'd bundle up some classic radio and share it with you, like Dave does every weekend here. Good evening. Welcome to Erie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. I'm accompanied by
Dave Bigley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're accompanied by
ourselves and Fogs in the chat. Yeah, and that's it for now. You never know what happens.
Hey, gotta be careful. It's not good if you say you're playing with yourself. It just doesn't sound good.
Yeah, I'm a little old for that.
There are pills that can take care of that.
Yeah, I could say something, but I won't. keep this on a family level, like we have been for the most part.
for the most part. Yeah,
it's time change weekend, ain't it?
It is. We are gonna lose another hour and create more havoc with everybody's bodies for another time here. So,
you know, I'm all for it. just throws a monkey wrench into everything, but that's okay. Yeah, when you get up at 2 a.m, you don't care much. That's me.
When I get up at 2 a.m, because I have Mother Nature called. That's when I get up at 2 a.m.
And then when you're me, it's hard to get back to sleep. So. Because the brain is always contorted and twisting and swirling as to what are we going to bring our listeners. It's three, count them, three radio programs tonight about time travel. That's the thing I love most about the time change, is it gives us a chance to drift back into the land of sci-fi.
Yes. And sometimes sci-fi. It's not always like on our... Ooh, thank you.
The goat.
Goat was getting a little tired and demanded to be fed the new batteries. So,
okay.
So goat is back. See,
goat
here we are. Goat's back.
Very soothing. Three programs. Bradbury 13. You know I love me some Ray Bradbury, so I'm going to be digging on that. We've got Quiet, Please, and Alien Worlds.
Yeah, we've played the Bradbury story before, but not from Bradbury 13. We played it from SF-68, and it's also there in suspense, but I tell you what, it's just not the same as the presentation here on Bradbury 13, Dale. They were so far out and about, and on top of that, you get to hear Bradbury himself help introduce these just a bit, you know?
Yep. And we've probably beaten it to death how we haven't really repeated any shows. It doesn't mean we don't repeat stories. And I think it's fun.
Right.
Hear the different performers, do the different versions.
Yes. And so this is from my estimation, of the ones that I've heard, one of the best ones. And that we got that tonight. Back to Alien Worlds, a fun little show from the early 1970s. And is it 70s? I think it's 70s. Yeah, oh, okay, late 70s, excuse me. And then another fave, The Quiet, Please. So got all kinds of great stories tonight, and all having to do with time change one way or another.
And perhaps some bonus material.
Oh, yes. We got a new series I dug up. They're 4 minutes apiece, but they're well worth our 4 minutes, and we have one to kick it off tonight. I'm sure we will have time for
more about that later. I love me some sci-fi, and I love me some time travel. We've talked about it endlessly here. The original time, not original, but the 1960 Time Machine movie based on the H.G. Wells story is a favorite, just a perennial favorite of mine, just a lot of fond memories. In fact, I took my very first date, David, to see that movie, the first date. My dad drove us to the theater, myself and my date, out to the Solon Theater. They were showing older movies there. So I got to see the 1960 Time Machine in a theater in 1974.
So it was already a trip back in time.
Yeah.
Going to the Solon Theater.
Mm-hmm. It was. And, of course, that adaptation doesn't exactly match the H.G. Wells story, but...
No. So how did the date respond to it?
She was very gracious. She knew I was a geek for this stuff. That was at the time, you know, I was at the height of my comic book collecting and Monster Movie Magazine buy-in and horror host watching. So, do I remember the pricing back then? No, I don't, Fogs. I wish I did. poster ads. There probably was an ad in the Cleveland Press, which was possibly the Plain Dealer. We only got the Plain Dealer on Sundays. We got the Press the rest of the week back in the day.
That's okay. Later on, the Plain Dealer got the Press, so you were in the same boat there.
Yeah. We used to be a two-newspaper town here up in Cleveland, but no more. No more. Good old Bob joins us in the chat. Greetings and salutations to you too, sir. And, of course, hi to Foggs, who's been here. Looks like it's just us two fellers bringing you these three tales. We might as well get rolling. Where shall we start, Dave?
Did you want to hit up Bradbury or save him for last?
Let's do the Bradbury. Why not?
Yeah,
I like this story.
Okay.
I've seen. I believe this story was also done on his Ray Bradbury Theater, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so. I can find it hard to believe. Well, again, that was Canadian and USA Today, isn't that what they? Our USA Network. I think that's what had that. So I can't imagine they had a big enough budget to really make it look as cool as your mind is just about to make this. From all the wonderful music and sound effects and voices that they have. I do believe they did that. I've got the complete Ray Bradbury show collection here up in my DVD collection. And someday when I retire, I plan to watch it from front to back. But
nice.
But for tonight, I think it'd be great to listen to Bradbury 13.
Sure. This one is the story we've been referring to is entitled A Sound of Thunder. Or is that a sounder of thunder? I think it's supposed to be a sound of thunder.
A sound of thunder, yeah, sound of thunder. Did I say sounder? I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, that's all right.
That's my old radio term's getting a hold of me there, yeah.
Yep.
And that comes to us originally from May 21st of 1984.
It's like yesterday.
Almost. This is Ray Bradbury. Join me for the next 30 minutes on a tour through time and space. Come along to the far future. Follow me into a strange past with stories that almost could be or might have been. Real or unreal, this is Bradbury 13.
The blood from their helmets. The monster lay a hill of solid flesh. Within it, you could hear the sighs and murmurs as the furthest chambers died. The organs malfunctioning. Liquids running a final instant from pocket to sac to spleen. Everything shutting off. Closing up forever. Ray Bradbury's A Sound of Thunder.
say how much longer is this going to take?
Be patient, Mr. Eccles. These things take time.
Yeah, well, how long does it take to make a phone call?
I'm sure Mr. Faulkner is doing all he can.
Well, I wish he'd do it a little quicker. I've still got to pack and tidy things up at the office. I've got a pretty full schedule, too, you know.
I'm well aware of that, Mr. Eccles. And we're doing everything we can to speed things up. But there's quite a bit of paperwork involved
here.
Yeah,
things are rough all over. That's why I need a break. I need to get away from everything for a while. And this trip ought to be just the ticket.
Oh, here's Mr. Faulkner now.
It's about time.
Well, good news, Mr. Eccles. I just got off the phone. Everything checks out fine.
Well, I told you it would. Could have saved you the trouble.
Well, you can't blame us for being careful, can you?
I suppose not.
Now all we need from you is $25,000, and we're all set.
Will you take a personal check?
Of course. Well, naturally, we've checked your credit, and everything is fine.
Naturally.
Like I said, we can't be too careful. Just make it out to Time Safari Incorporated.
Time Safari Inc. There you go. $25,000.
Thank you, Mr. Eccles. I promise you the time of your life.
For that much dough, it better be. Not... I can't believe I'm really going on the safari.
A time safari?
Yeah. Say, does this safari guarantee I come back alive?
Mr. Eccles, the only thing we guarantee is what's stated in our brochure. You name any year in the past and any animal, we'll take you there and you shoot it. It's also on the sign above your head. That's all we guarantee.
Fair enough.
And as far as coming back alive, well... I believe that's all part of the lure of the hunt, huh? The element of surprise, man against beast and all that, huh? But I'm sure you'll do just fine.
Hey, look, don't you worry about me. I've been on safaris before.
Yes, I'm sure you have. And now if you'll follow me, there's someone I'd like you to meet.
Step right in, Mr. Eccles.
What's this?
Now, this is our departure area.
Impressive, isn't it?
Oh, Travis! Now, come over here a minute. Mr. Eccles, I'd like you to meet Bill Travis, your safari guide in the past.
How do you do?
How long?
Travis will tell you what to shoot and where to shoot. If he says no shooting, then no shooting. If you disobey instructions, there's a penalty of another $10,000 plus possible government action on your return. Do you understand?
I understand. Is that the machine?
That's it.
A real-time machine. I never thought I'd see this in my lifetime.
Well, take a good look at it. It's a real thing. There are only two other like it in the world. One in Paris and one in Tokyo.
It's smaller than I thought.
A whole six people, plus supplies, food, and our rifles, of course.
It makes you think, doesn't it? If the election had gone badly yesterday, I might be here now trying to run away from the results. I mean, if Keith hadn't won, if Deutscher had become president of the United States...
Oh, we're lucky, all right. If Deutscher had gotten in, we'd have the worst kind of dictatorship. That man's anti-everything. Anti-intellectual, anti-human, anti-religion.
You know, some people called up half-joking. Said that if Deutscher became president, they wanted to go live in 1492. Some of them weren't joking. Of course, it's not our business to conduct escapes. We form safaris.
Anyway, Keith's in now, so all you have to worry about is shooting your dinosaur.
A Tyrannosaurus Rex. You promised me that.
A Tyrannosaurus Rex. The thunder lizard. The biggest, most dangerous monster in history. A meat eater and not afraid of another living thing.
Maybe, but that was 50 million years ago.
And that's exactly where you're headed, tomorrow morning. But first you'll have to sign this. We'll have it notarized for you.
What is it?
It's a release. If anything happens to you, we're not responsible.
What?
Those dinosaurs are hungry. They can crush you like a moth or swallow you in one bite.
Are you trying to scare me?
Mr. Eccles, you must understand our position. If you were to act out of fear and something unforeseen...
What Faulkner is trying to tell you is that we don't want you on the safari if you're going to panic and get yourself killed, or maybe one of us.
I can take care of myself.
Let me tell you something, Eccles. We had four safari leaders and six hunters killed last year, all because of panic.
We're here to give you the biggest thrill a real hunter could ever ask for. We'll take you back 50 million years to bag the biggest, most ferocious game of all time. But you'll do it our way or you won't do it. Your check's on the table. You could tear it up.
Now, where do I sign?
Here. Mr. Travis, he's all yours.
Step in and have a seat. My assistant will take your weapons and store them for you.
Be careful with that rifle, boy. That's a handmade stock on there.
Yes, sir. Wade's a good man, Eccles. He may be young, but he's been on a dozen safaris with me. You listen to him and you may get back alive.
All set, sir.
Good. Secure the hatch.
Securing the hatch?
Control, this is TS-1.
Go ahead, Travis.
We're locked down and preparing for automatic departure sequence.
Affirmative. Good hunting.
Thanks, Control. Gentlemen, welcome aboard Time Safari 1. Mr. Eccles, have you met your fellow hunters, Mr. Billings and Mr. Kramer?
How do you do?
Nice to meet you. This something?
Gentlemen, there'll be some physical sensation, so please fasten your seatbelts. Our trip could take about 18 minutes. Switch on.
Switching on.
Hey, Travis. Can these guns really stop a dinosaur cold?
If you hit him right. Some dinosaurs have two brains, one in the head, another near the tail. Go for the eyes. If you blind him, then go for the brain. We're on our way.
Every hunter that ever lived would envy us today.
I'll say. This will make Africa look like Illinois.
And look out the window. The building's gone.
Hey, it's night. No, it's day. It's night again.
Everything's a blur. It's spinning.
Hang on, everyone. Still in the earth, waiting to be cut out and put up. Remember that. Alexander, Caesar, Napoleon, Hitler, none of them exist. That out there is a jungle of 50,000,255 years before President Keith.
Hey, there's a path out there.
That's a metal anti-gravity path laid by Time Safari for your use. It floats 6 inches off the ground, doesn't touch so much as one grass blade, one flower, one tree. Stay on it. Don't go off the path, not for any reason. If you fall off, there's a $10,000 fine and legal action on your return. And don't shoot anything we don't okay.
Why?
We don't want to change the future. You've got to understand something. We don't belong here in the past. We're intruders. Besides, the government doesn't like us here.
Well, I should think it would encourage scientific research.
Government's not interested in digging around in the past. Not knowing it, we might kill an important animal, a small bird, a roach, even a flower. We could destroy an important link in the growing chain.
Are you kidding? There's millions of birds and insects. So what if I squash a bug?
All right, say we accidentally kill one mouse here.
Yeah.
Well, that means all the future families of this one mouse are destroyed, right?
So they're dead. Who needs mice anyway?
What about the foxes that'll need those mice to survive? For one of 10 mice, a fox dies. For one of 10 foxes, a lion starves. For one of a lion, all manner of insects, vultures, infinite billions of life forms are thrown into chaos. Eventually, 49 million years later, a caveman goes hunting a wild boar or a saber-toothed tiger for food. But you, my friend, have stepped on all the tigers in that region. By stepping on one single mouse, a caveman starves, a man who is an entire future nation. From his loins could spring an entire civilization, an entire race. You stomped on one single mouse and changed history.
Hey, you're joking, of course.
No, I think he's got a point.
Look, step on a mouse and you crush the pyramids. You leave a footprint like the Grand Canyon across history. Queen Elizabeth might never be born. Washington might never cross the Delaware. There might never even be a United States at all. So be careful, all of you. Stay on the path. Don't ever step off.
So what you're saying is for us not even to touch the grass.
That's right. A little error here could multiply everything out of proportion in 50 million years.
I see.
Of course, maybe our theory is wrong.
Oh, then you're guessing.
Well, of course we're guessing. Anyone who claims to know is a fool. But until we do know if messing around with time can change history, we're being careful. Very careful. Wade, explain the hunting procedure.
All right. As you know, this machine, the path, your clothing and bodies were sterilized before we left home base. We'll also wear these oxygen helmets to avoid contamination of the ancient atmosphere. We wouldn't want you to breathe any bacteria or germs into the air.
I brushed my teeth this morning.
Yes, but how would you like to breathe in an ancient spore for which you have no immunity? You could start an epidemic back home.
You say, how do we know which animal to shoot?
Good question. They're marked with red paint.
Paint?
Yes. This morning before our journey, I sent Wade here back in the machine. He came to this era and followed certain dinosaurs.
Well, you studied them?
Right. I tracked them through their entire existence with the help of the time machine and find out how long they live, how often they mate, and so on. When I find one that's going to die when a tree falls on him or one that drowns in a tar pit, I note the exact hour, minute, and second. Then I shoot a paint bomb. It leaves a red patch on his hide. We can't miss it. Then I compute our arrival in the past, so we meet the monster not more than 4 to 6 minutes before he would have died anyway. That way, we kill only animals with no future. Those that'll never mate again.
You see how careful we are, Eccles?
But if Wade came back this morning in time, he must have bumped into us. Our safari. Hey, how did it turn out? Was it a success?
Well, that would be a paradox. Time just doesn't permit that sort of mess, man meeting himself. When that sort of thing is about to occur, time just steps aside.
I don't understand.
Well, it's like a plane hitting a bump of air. You felt the machine jump just before we stopped?
Yeah.
Well, that was us passing ourselves on the way back to the future. It just sort of skipped over that part. So there's no way of telling what happened, if we got our dinosaur or if we even got out alive. All right, it's time. Everyone on his feet. Put on your helmets. One last thing.
Yeah?
If anything goes wrong, anything at all, walk quickly back to the machine and wait inside. No one's ever died on one of my safaris, and I won't let any weekend hunters spoil that record. Understand?
Yeah.
Check your rifles. Way out in the forward hatch.
Yes, sir.
Here we go. We lost internet on the west wing of Erie House.
Uh-oh.
So I am calling you from my cellulite phone.
Your cellulite phone? Well, maybe yeah. You're traveling back in time then, aren't you?
That's right. It's a flip. No, I'm kidding.
I just love the way you're presenting this story. And, of course, you get Ray Bradbury and the great Paul Frees to go along with it. What more can you ask for?
Working internet would be nice.
Yeah, it would be nice, yeah.
But that's okay. I'll pretend I can hear everything.
Oh, my goodness. You can't even hear it? My goodness.
No. So,
wow.
I can't do the sound bites, Dave. It's all you, baby. It's all you.
Oh, my. Okay. Well,
until I can get some control back.
I wonder what was going on there. That's why I went ahead and tried to turn us on. So we'll see.
Turn us on, baby. What's the radio?
You know how to turn on a computer? You go up to say, you have a really hot keyboard. Ooh, that mouse of yours? That's how you turn on a computer. That's how you turn on a computer, yeah.
There you go. I do have a pretty hot keyboard.
There you go.
Keys are different colors, and they change colors as time goes. It's weird.
Yeah, I have one of those gaming keyboards myself, and it drives me nuts because if the cat or something climbs up on my desk at night, and you know, the next thing I know, my whole computer's turned on again. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so much fun.
Oh, gosh.
So much fun.
There's a video for that. There's a video for that.
There is a video for that. I'm trying to find out where we're at now. Now that I've realized I've got control of the room.
It's all you in the studio, my brother.
Okay, well, that's why we got two of us here, I guess. So when things like this happen, it just happens. That's there you go. Okay. But, interesting story. Of course, we have heard it before here on Erie House. Presented far differently, presented from the South African a voice on that one. Although it's really cool when you hear those, Dale, that you don't have, you really don't hear much accent in a lot of those programs. They really try to Americanize it as much as possible, even though it's for
South Africa. I think they do a fair job.
Yeah, and
it's for a fair job of it.
For a South Africa audience, including there's a comedy show that was called Taxi, and the guy was a Brooklyn guy. And you'd swear the guy was from Brooklyn.
Yeah. Matter of fact,
I found a series. I knew it was there, but I never really checked it out and started checking out. There's a really 10 cool episodes of a program called The Challenge of Space. So we're going to get some of those coming up in the future because they got some really cool stories.
I can't wait to share them with you. Yep.
Yep, you'll be looking forward to those because they got some really cool stories in there. But I think we should go ahead and go in and wrap up this episode of the Bradbury 13. Find it again. There it is. And in the meantime, we should all bow our heads and pray for Dale's internet. So here we go.
Come back. Come back.
Okay, let's go.
Look at the trees and plants. There's nothing like this back home.
This is home, Eccles. Just a bit before your time.
Hey, look at that. Giant bats.
Not bats, pterodactyls.
I could pick those off without even aiming, just like duck hunting back home.
Stop that. Don't point your gun, not even for fun. That thing should go off.
The safety's on. I know what I'm doing. You'd love to see me shoot a lizard and wind up in jail, wouldn't you? Or step off the path and pay another $10,000, wouldn't you, Travis?
You're wasting oxygen.
Hey, say, where's our Tyrannosaurus?
Up ahead. We'll intersect his path in 90 seconds.
I'm running. Look for the red paint. Don't shoot till we give the word. And stay on the path.
Strange. Up ahead, 50 million years from now, election day finally over. Keith made president. Everybody's celebrating now.
How's they?
Millions of people crowding into bars, letting their hair down, getting drunk. Everybody looking ahead to the next 4 years before the next election.
And here we are, a million years lost, and they don't even exist. The things we worried about for months, years, haven't even been thought about. And no one's cooked the first meal yet. We stood on a hill and watched the sunset.
Don't you feel kind of lonely?
Mm.
Safety catches off, everyone.
I've hunted tiger, wild boar, even elephants. Well, this is it, the ultimate big game. I mean, look at me. I'm shaking like a kid.
10 seconds. Eccles, huh? You shoot first. Second, Billings. Third, Kramer. Got it?
Got it.
Eccles?
Yeah, I got it.
Hold it.
Hit. Through the mist.
There he is. There's his royal majesty.
It can't be you.
That thing could touch the moon.
He hasn't seen us yet.
It can't be killed. I was wrong. We were fools to come.
Shut up.
It's a nightmare.
Echo. Walk quietly and calmly back to the machine. We'll remit half your fee, no questions asked. Just do it.
I miscalculated. I didn't realize it would be this big. It's too big. Get me out of here, Travis. No.
It's Jesus.
There's the red tailor at Sheriff.
Get me out of here. It was never like this before. I've met my match. I admit it. I'm getting out of here.
Echo, don't run. Stop that way, Echo. Echo, stay on the path.
The master.
Judy. Judy in the head.
I got him. He's not going down.
He will.
Dead,
all right. That was a little too close. Here's a rag. Wipe the blood off. Wade, are you all right?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Here, better wipe yourself off, too. Wade Eccles is in the machine. Getting back here.
Okay. Travis, watch out! The tree!
Right on time. That's the tree that was scheduled to fall and kill this animal. We just saved it the trouble.
Look at that beast. I've never seen anything so massive in my life. 10 tons of cold flesh, at least.
You want the trophy picture, Billings?
Huh?
Well, we can't take this thing back to the future with us. The body has to stay right here where it originally fell, so the insects and birds can get to it as they were intended to. Everything in balance. But we can take a picture of you and Kramer standing next to it.
I don't think so, Travis. Hey! Here comes Eccles.
Travis. I'm sorry. Believe me.
Eccles, you almost killed us all.
Travis, what?
Save it. You're not coming back. We're leaving you.
You can't do that.
Stay out of this, Kramer. Eccles panicked, like I knew he would. And look at his shoes. Look at them. He ran off the path. He's ruined us. We'll lose our license to travel, and who knows what this imbecile's done to time. To history.
Take it easy. All he did was kick up some dirt.
How do we know that? We don't know anything. It's all a mystery.
I'll pay anything. 10,000. 100,000. No one has to know.
Walk over there, Eccles, next to the monster. Stick your arms up to your elbows in his mouth. Then you can come back with us.
Now, wait a minute.
The monster's dead, you yellow coward. We need the bullets back. They can't be left behind. They don't belong in the past. Here's my knife. Go over there and dig them out. All of them.
Give me that. You didn't ask if you can do that.
Didn't I? He'll live. Next time he'll know better. You can stick to hunting jackrabbits. Come on, we'll wait for him in the machine.
Everyone strap in. Wade, secure the hatch.
Yes, sir.
Travis. 9 shots. 9 bullets. Take them.
Strap in, Eccles.
Everything's secure.
Is it? Switch on. Let's go home.
$19.99, $2,000, $2,055.
We're home.
Hey, don't look at me like that. I haven't done anything. So I stepped on some dirt. So what? I got a little mud on my shoes. Big deal. I mean, what do you want me to do?
Shut up, Eccles. Open that.
Travis, I'll pay anything. I mean it.
You know something, Eccles? I might just kill you.
Yet.
Get out!
Hey.
Everything all right here?
Fine. Welcome home.
You're sure?
Well, of course I'm sure. You know something we don't?
Okay, Eccles. You're one lucky guy. Now get out of here. Don't ever come back. Ever. Eccles, did you hear me? What are you staring at?
Travis. You're fine.
What's that?
On the wall. Read it. Time Safari Inc. Safaris to any year in the past? You name the animal. Take you there? You shoot it?
Spelling. It's all wrong. The letters.
Different alphabet.
No, it can't be. Not a little thing like that.
Spalder, who won the presidential election yesterday?
What? Are you kidding?
Who won?
Well, you know who won. Deutscher, of course. Who else? Not that weakling Keith.
Deutscher?
Yeah, we got an iron man now. A man with guts. What's wrong with you anyway?
Look at the bottom of your shoe. There. The mud.
What is it?
A butterfly. A dead butterfly.
What's wrong with you people?
It can't be. Not a little thing like a butterfly. Not a little thing like that.
A butterfly.
Well, can't we go back? I mean, can we make a living again? Okay, can we start over? Come on!
It was just a small thing. A small thing that could upset balances and knock down a line of small dominoes and then big dominoes and then gigantic dominoes all down the years across time.
That's a lot of pizza.
A sound of thunder was adapted from the story by Ray Bradbury. Featured in the cast were Max Robinson, Bryce Chamberlain, Jay Bernard, Jeff Rader, Dwayne Hyatt, and Jennifer Olausen. Original music by Roger Hoffman and Greg Hansen. Production assistant was Patrick Mead. Associate producer was Jeff Rader. Bradbury 13 was created, produced, and directed by Mike McDonough. Executive producer was Dean Van Eitert. This program was produced with the funds provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting through National Public Radio Satellite Program Development Fund. The program was produced by Brigham Young University Media Services, which is solely responsible for its content. This is Paul Free speaking.
Lots of Domino pizza at the end. All right, CW
yep,
joins us in the chat, maybe. If her internet's doing any better than mine, we'll hear from her later. Always a treat. And always a treat to have Ray Bradbury here and his works.
Yeah. His is just such a great imagination. And again, taking, like, in many ways, almost ordinary people and putting them in these extraordinary circumstances and making it feel real.
Making it real, man. Making it real. No, that was a very well-produced program there.
Yes. A great adaptation, great acting, and Paul Frees and Ray Bradbury. What more can you ask for? I'm telling you.
I'm telling you, Bradbury looks like you, sounds like you.
Yeah.
You don't look like him. He looks like you.
He looks like me. Okay.
That's right.
How do we look like him after taking prunes when he does that Stan Freberg prune commercial? Yeah.
Oh, stop. No, I do think there's a resemblance somewhat between you and Mr. Bradbury.
I'll take your word for it, partner. I'll take your word for it.
It's just my thinking on it. Such as it is. Got some more radio coming too.
Yeah, do you have your controls back there?
Yeah, I'm up and running.
Okay,
they caught the little hamster that tripped that gnawed on the cord at the little country bumpkin internet provider we have.
Okay.
Here. Yeah.
Well,
GLW
case,
broadband.
Can,
GLW means gradually losing watchers.
Okay.
Yes.
A lot of them are doing that. Maybe you can crank up that hamster for a moral.
Immoral? Are you calling me immoral? Oh, amoral. That would be different.
Amoral.
It's almost like
because
I said
you are neither moral or unmoral. You are amoral.
Yes. It's almost like arguing macabre and macabre.
Yeah, almost.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garless moral of the story.
Yes, apologies to Gar. Who knows? When they call it a butterfly effect, it would really be about a butterfly. That's it.
There you go.
Absolutely.
What is a gerbil wheel? It just sounds so wrong in so many ways. Gerbil wheel?
That ought to fix it. That ought to fix it right there.
They have special bars for that, I think. I don't know. Yeah, I do have control of the studio, Dave.
We are all grateful for that.
Somewhat. So that was our first time travel delight. back when we thought we had all kinds of time. No, we still do. We're doing fine. Let's move on, though, to our next program. Hey,
I guess we're going backwards in time. So we go from this one, the most recent, to the next most recent, which would be that Alien? Of Alien Worlds.
Alien Worlds.
Yeah.
Now, this title is a very intriguing to me, Time Clash.
Yep. Which is not to be confused with the class I took in college, which was called Time Cash, or Time is Money, Time Cash. Yeah.
Yep, Time Clash. Should I stay or should I go? I don't know. Alien Worlds. This one was... originally
broadcast. You know, one cool thing about this show before we go in, most all of them have all the commercials, except they did have a commercial sponsor back then, and this one does have, I'm pretty sure, this is one that has the commercials intact.
Sweet.
I crossed my finger when I say that. Goat thought so too. Yeah.
Yeah. He's back there off in the distance screaming his little head off, but we love
That's
him
right.
for it. We love him for it. Time Clash, Alien Worlds, originally broadcast
July 29th of 1979.
And now, Peter Paul Mounds, Almond Joy, and Cadbury Chocolate Bars presents Alien Worlds. Slowly rotating at the edge of deep space, 1,000 kilometers beyond the atmosphere of 21st century Earth, is the Arthur C. Clarke Astronomical Observatory, Starlab. Here, Starlab Research Director Maura Cassidy, along with scientists and technicians of the International Space Authority, watch over the countless suns, planets, and star systems that fill the universe. This week, space exploration team captains John Graydon and Buddy Griff experience the dislocating shock of Time Clash and discover how suddenly the here and now can be transformed into the now and then on Alien Worlds.
Correct your approach vector, Captain. You're 19 degrees off course.
All right. I'll see what I can do.
Don't just see what you can do, Captain. Make a decision. You're running out of time.
What's going on, Jerry?
We've got a problem, Maura. If that petroleum tanker on screen 6 doesn't correct its approach vector, it won't clear the docking bay.
How's that, Starlab? Any better?
Pandora, you're still 14 degrees off course. Abort your approach. Return to your original position and stand by for new docking coordinates.
Roger.
Why are you guiding him in, Jerry? Is there something wrong with their navigational computer?
It blew a decoder module 5 minutes into the approach. And that guy is the worst pilot I've ever...
There's no way we can abort our approach, Starlab. We've got a retro malfunction.
Hit the collision alert, Maura.
Attention, docking bay 7. This is an emergency alert. All personnel, please clear the area. Repeat, clear the area. Docking officer Clark, contact the bridge.
Jerry, it's Bill Clark.
Any chance you might make it?
Not unless you believe in miracles.
Okay, Bill, get out of there.
Prepare to
That's right, Commissioner. The Pandora's guidance computer and retro system hadn't been serviced in over 2 years. And the crew couldn't get out because the explosive bolts on the emergency hatch malfunctioned. If REF sea crew hadn't put out the fire so fast, everyone aboard the Pandora would have burned alive.
Commissioner, when is the Xeon Corporation going to forget about petroleum and wake up to the fact that this is the 21st century?
They can't afford to wake up, Mara. The 20th century petroleum investments still account for 60% of their assets.
The only way they can make a profit on that petroleum is by selling it on Stella Vista.
But Xeon owns Stella Vista. What are they doing, selling it to themselves?
No, they're selling it to the independent mining companies out there.
Xeon has it all figured out, Mara. If a company wants to lease mineral rights on Stella Vista, they can do it. But only if they agree to use obsolete fossil fuel equipment. This way, Xeon not only makes money on their mineral leases, but they have a captive market for their petroleum.
Well, if that isn't extortion, I don't know what is.
Ethically, it is extortion, Mara. Legally, it's known as taking care of business.
The good news is that Xeon will have to keep its tanker fleet grounded until we finish our investigation of what happened today. Don't worry. Xeon won't be putting up any more tankers like the Pandora.
Do you know about the original Pandora, Commissioner?
The one in Greek mythology?
Well, my Greek mythology is a little rusty. But I believe Pandora was sent to Earth to punish mankind. I don't remember why. But I do remember she had some kind of magic box.
The fire of heaven, Commissioner. She was sent to punish mankind for accepting the fire of heaven from Prometheus. And when she opened that box, she released an eternity of human suffering. You know, I thought about that today when the Pandora split open in the docking bay. What happened was so ugly and terrifying. For a split second, I saw everything mankind had suffered during the last century. All because the oil of the earth, like the fire of heaven, had been used to make people small instead of great.
Alien Worlds will continue.
The mint patty.
For the sensation, a perfect relation, chocolate and mint.
From Peter Paul.
Cool as the snow falling light on the tree. Just take a bite for a cool in the green. New York, peppermint patty.
And get the sensation. Get the sensation, a cool combination, chocolate and mint.
York, peppermint patty. From Peter Paul.
Sends a shiver of cool right down to your knee. After one taste, you just gotta say please.
I want a York peppermint patty to get the sensation. Get the sensation.
York peppermint patty.
Get the sensation.
Alien Worlds continues. 18 hours after the oil tanker Pandora has split open and exploded in Docking Bay 7, an ISA disaster investigation team and a Xeon Corporation space tug arrive at Starlab from Earth. 10 hours later, the crew of the Pandora is taken to the nearby Stargazer security station for interrogation. And as the Xeon Corporation tug prepares to tow the burned-out hull of the Pandora back to Earth, Starlab scientists, technicians, and space exploration team officers begin a new day.
Skipper, when we get to Valaria this afternoon, let's ask their science master, what's his name again?
Galen Virago.
Yeah. Let's ask Galen Virago if we can go for a spin in that time machine of his.
Oh, I don't think so, buddy.
Where would you go if you could take a ride in it? I'd like to go back to 1939 and have Lamont Cranston teach me how to cloud men's minds.
Lamont Cranston?
Yeah, the Shadow.
He knew what evil lurked in the hearts of men.
And how did he know that?
When he clouded their minds, they told him the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I see. And what exactly would you do if you had the power to cloud men's minds?
I'd use it to cloud women's minds.
Sexist pig.
Coin, 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 coin.
Good morning, Captain Graydon. Captain Grimm?
Yeah, good morning, Cindy.
Cindy, have you had your mind clouded lately?
No, not since I read Six Characters in Search of an Author.
What's that, Cindy, a novel?
It's a play, Luigi Pirandello, 1921. The characters in the play are rehearsing the play when six other people show up, claiming to be characters the author left out of the play when he wrote it.
Were any of the people who showed up named Lamont Cranston by any chance?
No, Captain, not even by any chance. Now, how about breakfast? You ready to order?
Can you give us a few more minutes, Cindy? We're waiting for Dr. Cassidy and Commissioner White.
Okay.
Gee, I wonder what's keeping Maura.
I don't know. Maybe Commissioner White's shuttle was late.
Yeah, that tanker accident is really... Oh, here she comes now.
Morning, John. Buddy.
Hello, Maura.
Hi. Where's Commissioner White?
He spent most of the night with the ISA Legal Bureau, drafting the order to ground Zeon's tanker fleet. He's going to deliver it this afternoon, so we suggested we go on to Valaria without him.
Well, does that mean he's going to miss the time machine demonstration?
Just the parallel dimension drone pod playback, which I'm sure Galen will be happy to repeat. The commissioner said he'd be here tomorrow morning around 10, so when he arrives, you two can warp back here in the Solaris, pick him up, and warp back to Valaria again, okay?
Yeah,
okay.
Buddy.
Okay. Let me see that menu, buddy. I'm starving.
Here you go.
Thank you. Ooh. Ooh, those Neo cheese crepes look delicious, don't they?
Cheese.
Mm.
You know, that reminds me of a story.
Oh, dear.
There was this guy who had a mouse in his house. So he went out and bought a mousetrap. But when he got it home, he noticed he was out of cheese. You know what he used for bait?
Mm.
A picture of some cheese. And you know what he found in the trap the next morning?
Do tell.
A picture of a mouse.
Buddy.
Meanwhile, on Valaria, science master Galen Virago and his apprentice Marika Zarnos enter the chronology pavilion of Valaria's Magnitude 5 research complex. Standing in the center of the pavilion, illuminated by the cool white light of 200 free-floating microlamps, is the experimental time machine. A large 20-sided chamber made of semi-opaque metal. Suspended above the chamber is the penetrator capsule, a teardrop-shaped pod made of bright, seamless metal, which Galen and Marika have used to record fragments of the Earth's past.
Marika, I want to conduct one last test before Dr. Cassidy arrives. Lower the pod into the chamber. Are the chamber seals secure?
Yes, Galen. The REM scale indicators read 0 blue.
Rotate the chamber until its decoders interlock with the pod's Yerushalim data.
Yerushalim interlock. Confirm.
Interface the decoder lenses with day 12, month 4, AD 33, Earth.
Decoder lenses stable at subcycle 9 yellow.
Focus them on the subspan 303 and isolate the dimension.
Dimensional isolation confirmed. I have the execution site on the screen.
Is the deciphering terminal translating into Anglophonic?
Yes.
Cross-link the audio sensors.
Okay, that's part one. I'm trying to get that last comment from Fogsbane. I passed the geode in a hallway exhibit last week and thought of you. all crystally inside, I guess. I don't know. Or crystallized.
Hey, Gigi Sidepaper has joined us back again here in the chat there, Dale.
Well, wow, it's been a long time. Welcome back, GGSI Paper. We missed yous here at Erie House. I'm glad you're back for some sci-fi, too, as we're traveling through time.
Yeah, just like we're traveling time on Sunday morning. Everybody gets up at 3 a.m. and turns back their clock an hour, then tries to go back to sleep.
Yep, it'll be back to the future in a way.
In a way, it will be.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for this to finally be over at some silly point. This whole thing is pointless. This time change thing.
I don't know. Dave, when we retire from our regular jobs, we're not going to care.
Well,
we're
going to
keep our own time.
I'll get up when I want to get up.
That's right.
I'll get up when I want to get up. Yep.
If I want to set my alarm for like 1 a.m. because there's a really cool movie on I want to see. And sure, I probably have it on a disc somewhere, but there is something special about a channel that puts it on for you. There is something special about that to me.
I know I have many shows that are just within my reach of my fingertips, but I won't reach out and put the DVD in. Instead, I'd rather watch all those silly commercials they put in there.
Yeah, I love it too because it's very reminiscent of the era, and it just kind of helps you time travel, if you will, back to them thar days when these were new shows.
And kind of like in our next show, one of the lines is we're down in the cave and this tour group comes by. And they say, pay no attention to those two behind you. They're just examples of a bygone era of that of horror hosting. And Klaus leaves me, says, I don't feel like I'm a bygone era. I said, me either.
No, it's not bygone yet, but it's bygone from the quote-unquote mainstream, I think.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Such as it is.
Which is odd because as more and more streaming comes to networks, you'd think the local TV stations would like to have something a little original to point at. You know, you would think that.
Discussing
this once in a Gulardi. What's that?
Stop making sense now.
Well, you and I talked this back at maybe it was the last Gulardi Fest. And I said, you know, it's not like every show can just do nothing but stream over and over. And the big show at the family was Modern Family. Modern Family, and Dan O'Shannon, who was a producer there, executive producer, stopped when he was walking by and said, what? It was just a perfect storm. It just came out of my mouth, and I didn't even realize he was there, but we stopped him dead.
Those days. Gulardi, I guess Gulardi Fest is gone for good now, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. If they ever do one, it'll be one as a tribute to Big Chuck. But it's so expensive to try and put together that I do not think that there will be another Gulardi Fest. So what a shame. Well, again, another part of a bygone era about a bygone era, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Such a shame because everybody was truly appreciative of Houlihan, Big Chuck, Little John, and Gulardi, of course, you know. But many of us.
And
I was
Super House
Gulardi,
everybody, all the other local legends.
Absolutely.
And some of our news people made it a point to be there for those.
They did. Yeah, so it was really a special time for Northeast Ohio, which, again, is unfortunately now part of a bygone era.
Yep. Just think we were once the center of the universe. Well. You still got Erie House, folks. So we got that going for you. You lucky devils.
Well, lucky is one word for it.
Yeah, lucky stiff.
So before we depress ourselves, we should get into part two of our story. The exciting conclusion.
Of Time Clash from Alien Wilds. Perfect.
about you, Maura?
Fine, buddy. Fine, buddy. Fine, John. Fine, John.
What's the problem, Maura?
I still have double vision from the warp through.
Oh, so do we, Maura.
Terrific.
So, here we are. Six characters in search of Valaria. Oh, speaking of Valaria, there it is. Screen 9, Skip.
Solaris to Valaria Comm Center.
We're tracking you, Solaris. Reduce speed to 1,200 kilometers per hour and maintain present course for 3 minutes, 16 seconds. At 0 plus 316, terminate your engines and lock your controls. One of our pilot drones will guide you down.
Roger. I'll take it down to 1,200 kph, buddy.
First got here. No, I really don't think I could have made it through the day. They all just stood there and watched him die.
Someday you must tell me about that holy man and why he was submitted to such torture and pain. We will, Galen. May I be permitted to say something about the three of you?
Of course.
The way you've reacted to the tragic events of your planet's past leads me to believe that if the Earth had always been inhabited by spirits like yours, much of what we've seen here today would never have happened.
Later, as Valaria's twin suns tint the morning sky a pale, crystalline yellow, the Valarian Comm Center receives a transmission from Starlab.
Please inform Dr. Cassidy that Commissioner White has arrived, and that you'll meet Captain Graydon and Captain Griff in docking bay 31.
Half an hour later, Buddy and John board the Solaris, and as Maura and Galen watch from the Valaria Tracking Center, the sleek white SET interceptor blasts off for Starlab.
Affirmative, John. The resolution on this screen is so good I can practically see into the cockpit.
How many fingers am I holding up, Maura?
13.
Skipper, she really can see into the cockpit. All right, here we go. Warp through in 5 seconds. Maura, it's all turning inside out. Maura!
John! Buddy! Galen, what's happening?
Just a moment. The Parsec device aboard the Solaris has experienced a primary decoder malfunction. The ship is passing through the time-space continuum in reverse.
Galen, the ship's back on the screen. John, buddy, do you read me?
Yes, Ma. I read you.
John?
Ma. Help us. We become children.
Alien Worlds will continue.
Pardon me. Isn't that a Cadbury chocolate bar? I've never tried one.
Oh, that's too bad.
Do you mind if I have a teensy piece?
Hey, you took my bar.
I'll just take a little bit.
It was for my wife and me.
Oh, she'll love it. See, this is great. You know you can get carried away with this stuff?
Yes, I've noticed.
Oh, come on, it's a big bar.
It's getting smaller.
When people get a taste of a big, thick Cadbury chocolate bar, they get very carried away. Because only a Cadbury bar is so rich, so creamy, so Cadbury. And with the big size Cadbury chocolate bar, you get a big choice. Cadbury fruit and nut, Cadbury almond, Cadbury caramello, and of course the big favorite, Cadbury milk chocolate. So remember, when you get your Cadbury, be careful. Because with Cadbury, people can get very carried away.
Can I have my Cadbury back now?
Your Cadbury? Oh, well, I guess I got carried away.
You'll get carried away with Cadbury. If you would like to make direct contact with alien worlds, get a pencil and paper ready, and I'll give you our star coordinates at the end of the program. Alien Worlds continues. During a routine time-space continuum warp through, John and Buddy are sent 30 years into the past when a Starsmith Parsec accelerator aboard the Solaris malfunctions.
Mora, it's all turning inside out.
And when the Solaris finally emerges from its dimensional inversion...
Mora, help us. We become children.
Science Master Galen Virago immediately orders the launch of a pilot drone, which locks onto the Solaris and returns it to Valaria. Two hours later, Buddy and John are once again standing before the Valarian Time Chamber.
Wow, Buddy. Looks like you're going to get that right after all.
Yeah. You will be joining me, of course.
Naturally. It isn't every day that we get a chance to ride the Whirlwind.
The Whirlwind?
It's part of a verse by an 18th century English writer named Joseph Addison. My mother used to read his poems to me.
How does the rest of the verse go?
Let me see. And please the Almighty's orders to perform. Rides in the whirlwind and direct the storm. Kind of sums up our situation, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Galen, are you absolutely certain there's no danger?
They won't be harmed, Mora. Marika has transported me into Valaria's past many times.
You didn't indicate that in the communique you sent to Commissioner White.
I didn't indicate it in the communiques I transmitted to the other planets either.
Why not?
Marika?
This is our third machine, Mora. And during its construction, we decided that the secrets of time travel would be shared only with those who understand that all life is sacred and that all living things, no matter how small, have an infinity of their own that must be respected.
Those who do not understand that are the ones who will use time travel to dangerously manipulate not only their own destinies, but the destinies of others.
If during yesterday's drone pod demonstration, you and Buddy and John had reacted indifferently to the tragic events of your planet's past, we would have sent you away this morning.
And if, as you went away, this accident had transformed all three of you, we would have simply closed our eyes and put you out of our minds.
Then you were testing us.
Time is a fragile thing, Mora. And its control can be permitted to exist only where fragile things are loved.
Well, Mara, it looks like we've passed the test of time after all.
Do you both still feel the same? I mean, you're not frightened or anything like that.
Nothing's changed, Mara. It's like Galen said earlier. The physical organism changes during time reversal, but consciousness doesn't. It feels good to be alive inside a child's body. We're not young, we're not old, and we're not afraid.
The chamber is ready, Galen. I've interfaced their time, date, and place of birth information with the alternate reality decoders, and the dimensional inversion lenses are stable at subcycle 6. Violet.
Buddy, John, go into the chamber now. Cross-link the audio sensors, Marika.
John, Buddy, can you hear me?
Yes. Do you want us to lie down on these recliners, Marika?
Yes.
Now, close your eyes and relax. During the reversal, you will both be transported back to the separate moments of your birth, and then return to the here and now. You will be unconscious when you return, and you will have no memory of what happened to you aboard the Solaris.
Okay, Galen. See you later, Mara. Goodbye. See you soon.
Begin the cycle, Marika.
Commissioner White.
John just woke up too, and Commissioner White decided to take his own ship. He'll be here in about half an hour. How do you feel?
Like Rip Van Winkle must have felt when he woke up. Spaced out and hungry enough to eat a kangaroo. Well, that's funny.
What?
What's the date today, Maura?
November 14th. Why?
Well, the calendar on my watch. I just noticed it. It says May 23rd. My birthday.
Clash was written by Ron Thompson and starred Linda Gary, Chuck Olson, Bruce Philip Miller, and Corey Burton, with special guest stars Mel Wells, Eric Taslitz, Susan Silo, and Eric Green. Associate producer Ron Thompson, music director Tom Rounds, engineer Stu Jacobs, assistant to the producer Jim Cook, technical consultant Peter Skye. Alien Worlds was created, produced, and directed by Lee Hansen and is distributed by Watermark Incorporated. And now, if you'd like to make direct contact with the cast and crew of Alien Worlds, here's our address. Post Office Box 8170, Universal City, California, 91608. That's Post Office Box 8170,
California.
Universal City, California, 91608. Let us hear from you. And so, until next week, this is Roger Dressler inviting you to join us for our next adventure, Death Song, from the elsewhere and elsewhen of Alien Worlds.
Elsewhen, that sounds mysterious. But Dave, we gotta find something out.
Peter Paul and Cadbury Chocolate Bars hope you've enjoyed Alien Worlds.
Could we review the original broadcast date? He credited someone in this program whose name caught my attention, Mel Wells.
This is July 29th of 1979.
Could be him. Mel Wells, wasn't he the wasn't he in Little Shop of Horrors? The wasn't he Mushnick?
Oh, he may have been. Yeah, but
I wonder
didn't recognize
if
his voice.
Well, I don't know if it's the same Mel Wells. That's all I'm asking.
Ah, okay.
I wonder if there's a way to find out.
Well,
which
there's
Mel
a way
Wells.
That we can. Well, there is a way that we can find out about what the moral of the story might be.
Yeah,
thanks
the first...
to our sponsor. Thanks to our sponsor, their sponsor. Yes.
Yes. Step one, be scrolled to the right place. Erie House Radio proudly presents Agarless, Moral of the Story.
Yes, apologies to Gar, but no apologies to their sponsor. Time travel is as good as it sounds, but for me, I'd prefer a mounds. There you go.
Like a mounds
absolutely.
Candy bar?
Yes.
Oops, I
yes.
flushed the wrong thing. Anyway.
Not necessarily.
That's true. I love my mounds.
That's a deep, dark chocolate.
Yep. Didn't they have nougat, too, or something? I don't remember.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm having a seizure just thinking about it. Anyhow.
Yeah, you would, yes, yes.
I just wonder if that was the same Mel Wells. We'll sniff around and try to find out for you, gang. We'll try to find out.
We'll try. There you go.
So it's nice to have a boatload of folks in the chat with us live listening along with our tribute to the time change here with time travel stuff. I've always liked the paradoxes that time travel creates.
Yes. Yeah.
Are there multiple realities where different things, different paths were taken? Hmm. If so, there'd have to be an infinite number of them if you believe in the butterfly, if you understand the butterfly effect.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's what I always thought, like the Sliders show. I thought it was very interesting how they would slide same time and in a different setting, but there's the same things going on. I really liked that Sliders show.
And they make good hamburgers, too.
They make good hamburgers, yeah.
Sliders. Oh, yeah. The reason they call them that. They slide right through. One more tale tonight, plus perhaps some bonus material. I think we'll make time. As our third show is quiet, please.
Yes. And, we're heading back to the... late 1940s for this one, so we've been traveling back in time
as we take
our shoes tonight.
That's all right. So. We'll make up for it tomorrow when we turn the clocks ahead, and we'll be back in time.
I never cared. I never mind gaining the hour, but I always hated giving it back, you know?
Yeah. It's my hour. I want to keep it.
That's right.
So
that's right.
This little ditty has a title... It's Later Than You Think. This tale from Quiet, Please.
Yeah.
Originally broadcast.
August 2nd of 1940 and 8.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please.
Quiet, goat. A carrot. A good goat.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for tonight is called It Is Later Than You Think.
And
and so I venture to say that the Germans and the Japs are trembling in their boots at this moment for the word that Lindsey Bradley is on their trail. Lindsey, our loss is Uncle Sam's gain. Your fellow employees wish you success, adventure, and a bushel of medals. And in token of our high esteem for you, in remembrance of the happy hours we have spent with you in the plant, for we are all one big happy family, I present you with this 17-jewel, solid gold, imported wristwatch. May it ever remind you of your good friends here at this arsenal of democracy you are leaving to face our enemies in person. Peace! Peace!
All I can say, fellow employees, fellows, and Mr. Throop, all I can say is that I thank you.
Beautiful watch, Lindsey. But for heaven's sake, this is your last night before you go to camp. And I do wish you could pay a little attention to me.
Verna, I'm sorry. I never had such a nice watch, though, and I get carried away. I'm sorry, honey, really.
Well, for goodness sake, act like it, then.
Huh? Act like what?
Act like you're sorry. Kiss me.
Oh. I should say so.
I am going to miss you, Lindsey.
Oh, heck, it isn't as if I was going overseas right away, honey. Oh, my goodness, I'll probably be in the camp for quite a while, learning things. Heck, you could come and see me often.
Maybe I could get an apartment in the town where the camp is, and the sergeants, or whoever it is, would let you live at home and just go to the camp days.
Well, I don't know about that.
It would be wonderful, Lindsey. You could come home for meals, and you could have a colonel in for dinner. It would be just like home.
Uh-huh.
First thing you do when you get to camp is find a nice apartment, about four rooms, maybe five, and I'll come right away, huh?
I'll see, honey.
You don't seem to be very excited about it.
Well, I don't know how it'll be at camp. You know, I might not be able to find an apartment, and maybe I wouldn't be staying there long.
You don't want me to be with you.
Why, sure I do, Verna, but I...
You just want to leave me here all alone in this old place while you go off camping out and being in parades and having a wonderful time?
Well, I don't think it'll be like that, Verna. Francis Felton wrote last week from Camp Breckenridge, and he said he'd lost 13 pounds.
Well, he could stand it. Goodness, I just bet it's wonderful for the boys in camp, marching and having sham battles. And goodness, I wonder what you'll be doing this time tomorrow.
It's 11 hours now, and I'll be arriving.
What are you doing with that watch?
Huh? I was just setting it ahead 11 hours.
All right. Get your heels together, all of you. Chin in, chest out. You're at attention.
My goodness gracious.
Quiet.
But I just...
And I said silence.
Could I ask a question, Lieutenant?
I'm a sergeant.
Could I ask a question, Sergeant? Please?
What?
Where am I?
You crazy, Mac?
Well, gee, honest, sir, I'm not sure.
Well, I'll just refresh your memory, bud. You're at Camp Dix, New Jersey. And you're a great, big, ugly, flat-footed private in the infantry, whether you like it or not.
Well, for heaven's sake. Well, for heaven's sake, I said. How I got there, I will never know. One minute I was sitting on the Davenport with Verna right in my own living room in Highbridge, New Jersey, just for no reason, setting my watch 11 hours ahead, and then, bung, I'm alongside the railroad station in Camp Dix, and it's daylight, and this sergeant... Well, now, things don't happen like that. There's no such thing as magic. But, well, how? Tell me how. All right, you can't tell me, so I'll tell you. I'll tell you how I found it out. It was an hour later that they let us sit down a few minutes. And there was a man sitting alongside me, and he said, I have a good-looking watch, didn't I? So I told him how the boys at the plant gave it to me, and he admired it some more. And then he said, did I know my watch was an hour fast? So I said, is that so? And I turned it back, and...
All right, get the your heels together, all of you. Chin in, chest out. You better attention.
And I heard myself say, my goodness gracious.
Quiet.
But I just said...
And I said silence.
Could I ask a question, Lieutenant?
I am a sergeant.
Could I ask a question, Sergeant? Please. And by goodness, I went through that whole hour again. And I was so tired, and only got back to the time and the place where the man said I had a good-looking watch. And I looked at that watch. I didn't say anything this time. So time went on the way it ought to go on, and they took us to eat. But I couldn't eat anything, because my stomach was full of great big butterflies. Finally, when I had a minute, I got to a phone booth, and I waited 45 minutes, and I got a call through to Highbridge to find out what Verna had to say about it, and Mrs. Houlihan from next door answered, and she said Verna was in bed with a high temperature. And what the dickens did I do to her on my last night at home? So I hung up. Sure. The watch. Whatever I said it at, that's what time it is. Well, now, thinks I, this could be a very handy thing. But I have to be careful. Say, where do you suppose they got that watch? It's really... And then I happen to think of something. My gosh, what would happen if that watch ran down someday if I forgot to wind it and it stopped? Would time stop? Wow. Well, I'm not going to try to find out. You know, this sergeant, he wasn't such a bad fella at that. I was sitting on my bunk one night after supper. There wasn't anybody else in the barracks, and he walked in. I said, hi, Sergeant.
What's with you, Bradley?
Oh, I'm just tired.
Ain't you going to the movies?
No, they ran that picture in Highbridge 2 months ago.
Cigarette?
Thanks. Are you going?
I've been kind of low.
Oh, that's so?
Yeah. Got a dear John.
Of which?
Letter from my girlfriend.
Oh?
Well, you know. Dear John, I don't know how to tell you, but I have fallen in love with another guy, and you and I will always be good friends.
Oh.
Yeah, great. We'll never get married, kid.
I am married.
Oh, excuse me. You happy?
Well, oh, sure. Sure, yeah, sure, sure.
Great.
We've been married 4 years.
Miss her, huh?
You bet. This is the kind of... vacation, though. You know. She said she might come down here to live, near the camp.
You like that?
Well...
What's your monkeying with that watch?
Huh? I was just thinking of an experiment.
What kind of experiment?
Oh, nothing. There's nothing.
Want a beer? Let's walk over to the PX.
So, we walked over to the PX, and we had a beer, and then we had another, and... me and my big mouth, beer always makes me talkative. The sergeant noticed I was fiddling with my watch. I couldn't get it off my mind. And finally the beer and I told him the story. Of course, he didn't believe it. He laughed a lot. He said I had a great imagination. And then after a while, he walked back to the barracks with me, and we sat down in my bunk again. And well, the place was still empty, and he was still laughing about my imagination. I got huffy. I told him I'd prove it to him.
How will you prove it to me?
Well, how soon will the movie be out and the fellas come back to the barracks?
An hour.
Okay. Watch.
What are you doing?
Setting it ahead an hour.
Why don't you guys shut up and go to sleep?
Turn it back!
Turn
it back! Okay, Sergeant.
Brother.
Yeah. See, it works.
Hey. All appeared. Just out of nothing.
That's the way it'll be an hour from now.
Oh, gosh. What you can do with that thing?
Well, I've been using it.
You have? How?
I've been setting it ahead every day for a while.
What for?
See if my wife is going to arrive.
Huh? Wife?
Well, I'd like to have some warning, see?
Oh, so you can hit me for a pass.
Either that, Sergeant, or so as I can go AWOL. No, Verna's all right. We get along all right, but, well, heck, she demands it. I mean, I never got out before I was drafted, and Well, darn it, I kind of like being my own boss. That is, as far as the Army had let you. You know what I mean? I love Vern all right, but I knew what it'd be once she got settled in an apartment here in town. Heck, Highbridge isn't far away. I could get a pass once in a while, but here in town, no, I figured that was too close. Yeah, I feel a lot different about it now, but this was quite a while ago. See, 1944, and I'd only been away from her a few months. You know what I mean? Okay. So she snuck up on me, after all. I forgot one night to set my watch ahead, and first thing the next morning, I got the word that she was here. So I talked to the sergeant out and talked to her out of a pass. We kidded a little. I went to town to meet her. It was kind of nice. But, gosh, I couldn't get a word in edgeways.
Lindsay, you're so thin.
Well, I've been...
I know you. You just won't talk up to these sergeants and majors and people. Just let them walk all over you. You wait till I see somebody in authority.
Oh, now, Verna, you can't...
You've been drinking. I bet you've been drinking. Well, I'll put a stop to that. When we get an apartment here in town, you can have ginger ale at home. And I'll make brownies, and you can have some of the boys over once in a while.
Verna.
What?
Verna, do you love me?
Why, silly child, of course I do. Here, give me a kiss. Now wipe off that lipstick. Are you going to take me out to the camp? I'm just dying to see it.
Well, I thought maybe we'd stay in town.
Now, Lindsay, I'm not going to sit around in this dismal town all day and all night when there's all sorts of interesting things going on out where you're camping. I came down here to enjoy myself, and that's what we're going to do no matter what you
So think. That's the way it was. Yakety-yakety all the time, and I got awful tired of it all of a sudden. You know, it used to be I could kind of shut my ears to the yakety-yakety, but I seemed to have lost the trick somehow, and so then I thought, oh, gosh, I'm going to see how long this is going to go on. So I turned my back and I moved the hands of my watch ahead, and I got it 10 hours ahead, and I heard a kind of sigh or something. And I turned around, and you know what? There was this sergeant kissing my wife just as big as you please.
Well. Darn, that's the nerve of that guy.
Sergeants are usually bigger than life, aren't they?
Yes. When you're just a recruit, a private, the sergeants are there to scare the living crap out of you. At least it was that way in my day. They probably, I don't know. I don't even want to get into that, but things are different now.
Yep.
Things are different.
Yep.
They did not mollycoddle us too much. The only thing is they couldn't hit you, but they could.
They could do anything else but that, huh?
Encourage others to do so. Wink, nudge. I'm kidding. Sort of. We got a good one here, Dave. This is an interesting
Another
way
interesting.
To tell a time yeah. travel tale. An interesting way.
Kind of like a kind of stopwatch in a way, the way Rod Serling presented. But when he hit the stopwatch, it stopped. Everything froze but him.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a little different. This is a little different.
He's time skipping all over the place.
Yeah, got to watch playing with that watch. You don't want to catch your gal kissing the sergeant. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not cool. That is not cool. And we'll find out what happens. Plus, we definitely got time for something fun, something different, something new that we'll be bringing from time to time. Here's the conclusion of It's Later Than You Think.
There was this sergeant kissing my wife just as big as you please.
Well, and a goat, too. This is kinky.
Well, I grabbed his arm and I tried to yank him away, but it was just like I wasn't there. And Verna spoke to him, and it didn't sound like the yakety-yakety she used on me.
Oh, Sergeant Kilroy, you're so impulsive.
And then I remembered that what I was seeing was 10 hours away, and I quick spun the hands of my watch back again, and well, doggone it, I went too far back.
Lindsay, you're so thin.
And that was where I came in, and I had to go through all of it again. But doing the repeat on the kisses wasn't so bad, till I remembered the way she was going to talk to Sergeant Kilroy about 10 hours from now.
Hello?
Well, sir, about 5 o'clock he showed up and he told me I had to go back to camp. How do you like that? He could stay in town, he said, and he'd be glad to show my wife around and keep her entertained whilst I was away, my pal. And I crossed him up all right. I waited a couple hours after I got back to camp, and then I just set the watch ahead. And it's morning, and the whole company, including Sergeant Kilroy, is turning out for reveille. Well, she stayed there. She got an apartment, such as it was. I got a lot of passes. I took the sergeant in with me every once in a while, and everything was as nice as pie. I didn't do much with the watch because I was scared of it. I took awful good care it was wound all the time. I tried once to see if I could turn it ahead farther than 12 hours, but you know, I couldn't. When the hands got the 12 hours ahead, everything just clicked right back. When you see 12 hours, the hands just come right back to where they were when you started. Well, anyway, half a day's enough for me. Heck, it's too much. Think it ain't? Yeah, there come a day. There always comes a day. A big bunch of us got pulled out early in the morning with our A and B bags and everything out of the kitchen stove hung onto us. We're off to the races. Only Sergeant Kilroy, he's permanent detail. He stays in camp. Great deal. Well, I'm smart. I get myself lost in the dark. And I beat it for a taxi, and I haul down to town our apartment. And all Verna doesn't know I'm leaving. I don't know where I'm going. And no, I'm not trying to desert. I want to find out something. I get in the apartment, and Verna doesn't wake up. And she looks awful cute asleep. But I turn the hands on my watch ahead 3 hours. Nothing happened. Except the bed was all of a sudden empty, and I could hear Verna out in the other room, and of course it was full daylight now. So I heave a big sigh of relief. Everything's all right. And then...
Kilroy's here, darling.
And I was so mad. I thought what to do, and then, just as Vern unlocked the door, I got it. I set my watch back where it belonged, and it was early dark morning again, and she was asleep there in the bed, smiling, and I got out of the apartment. I'll fix that, I said to myself. I'll beat it back to camp, and I'll knock that Kilroy's head off, and a big MP stepped up in front of me.
Hey, take it easy, Mac. Where you going with that equipment?
Huh? I missed the train, huh?
Oh, you missed the train, huh?
Yeah, I...
That's fine, Mac. Listen, the train ain't left yet, Mac.
Oh?
It ain't due to leave for 20 minutes yet, Mac. So I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. Just get in the Jeep here with me, Mac. I'll deliver you special. Right to the steps of the car. Okay, Mac?
And so I started my trip overseas handcuffed to an MP. And there wasn't any kidding about it. I was on that train for good. And all the jumping up and down in the world wasn't going to do me any good. Because in an hour and a half, I was sitting on a bunk about a foot above sea level in the hold of a great big transport, and the ship was aiming for Africa as fast as they could turn over the propeller. Me and my fancy watch, I wish I'd never seen it. But what can a guy do? I throw it away, what'll happen? It'll stop him. Well, all right, maybe time won't stop it. You see what's happened before. Maybe I won't take chances. So, well, it turned out it was a good thing I hung on to it. Because I'm in a hole a few weeks later with another guy in the bazooka, and Mr. Ramos' tanks are doing all right, and I'm scared. This fella, Red Felbinger, his name was, he's my loader, and we're popping away at Krauts whenever we can get a beat on one, and then there's a kind of lull, and we don't see anybody, so we light up the smoke. And Red leans his arms up on the edge of the hole and looks out.
Looks like they... blowed the whistle, Lindsay.
Huh? What you mean?
I don't see anybody any place.
Let me see. And that was the end of Red Felbinger. And it was pretty near the end of me, except for the watch. All the German tanks in the world were heading right straight for me and blazing away like the 4th of July. Only it wasn't no celebration. The air was thick with hunks of iron, and I leaned down to pick up my bazooka, and then the thought come to me. I reached for my watch. 2 hours, I'll set it back, I thought. And I did, and all the tanks and everything disappeared. So I climbed out of the hole and started away from there. And all I remember was... And everything went black and red and green, and then dead. No, not dead. But I got it right through my neck, and they told me in the hospital that the bullet traveled on down my arm and came out right alongside my watch. I was pretty scared about the watch, but the nurse was a nice girl. She laughed, showed me how she'd put it on my other arm. Wound it, too, she said. I felt better. But then I remembered I'd never set it ahead again to where it belonged, and I asked her to set it, and she tried. She couldn't. Something happened to her. Well, look, I won't try to tell you about all the trouble I had with my arm, how I got sent back to the States, spent the next 4 years in the hospital. Verna? Yeah, sure, I saw Verna. I saw her a lot. She used to come and see me all the time. And she was different. Seemed like all I'd been through kind of changed her. She felt so sorry for me. Gosh, I got the feeling sorry for myself. You know how it is? Well, it was a long time, those years, with all I had to do to my neck and my arm. Once in a while, I'd think about Sergeant Kilroy. But, gosh, Verna was so different now. I knew everything was okay, so I forgot it. Funny thing was, though, I couldn't turn the watch up to where it belonged all that time. I tried. The nurses tried. The doctors. I couldn't do it. There was no soap. And all this time, I got nervous and irritable. I used to have delusions. One day last month, it was the first day I had my artificial arm. I woke up kind of dopey. I thought I'd seen somebody leaving my room at Walter Reed. I thought I heard the nurse talking to a guy in civilian clothes that looked kind of familiar, and I thought I heard him answer.
Oh, no, just tell him Kilroy was here.
Well, I was going to tell Verna, but the new arm and everything, I forgot. So I got out last week. It was kind of fun. I went back to High Bridge. Verna fixed up her old place swell, and yeah, she was special nice to me. I pretty near felt I could afford to lose that arm to make that difference in Verna. She was all right. Only she kept kidding me about the way I fiddled with my watch. I couldn't tell her I was trying to get it set back to where it belonged. There was 2 hours worth of difference in that watch. I guess I got into the habit when I felt so lousy, always fiddling at it, you know, that... Somebody at the door. Verna's downtown getting her hair fixed. I wonder who it is.
Yes. Hi, Lindsay.
Kilroy.
Mind if I come in a minute, kid?
Why, sure. Sure, Kilroy.
Thank you.
Glad to see you. Gee, Verna, I'll be glad to see you, too. Sit down.
Much obliged. Well, I see you still got the trick watch.
Yeah, still got it. How you been?
What are you fiddling with the watch for, Lindsay?
It got stuck.
Deck?
Yeah, I keep fooling with it. Well, tell me where you've been since you got out.
I wish you'd stop fooling with that watch.
No, I'm sorry. Hey, by golly, I got it. I got it. I'll just set it ahead 2 hours to make...
Yeah. Verna, it's about time. Where you been? All right, I'll meet you there. What? Good Lord, yes. Certainly I did. What? Well, how would you like to sit around in a room for 2 hours with a guy you just shot?
Quiet Please for tonight was called It Is Later Than You Think. It was written and directed by Willis Cooper, and the man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell.
And Abby Lewis played Verna, Don Briggs was the sergeant. Miscellaneous voices and colorful characterizations with the creations of Wynette Latimer. Music for Quiet Please is played by Albert Berman. Now, a word from Willis Cooper.
The characters in tonight's stories were all fictional, of course. For next week, I have a story for you called The Thing on the Forble Board.
And so until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell. This program was heard in Canada through the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
We had Slobble Board on here before.
We did, yes.
Some time
ago. Back in our first year, I believe.
Yeah.
Back in our first year.
First year doing old-time radio back in 2017. And that one, of course, was It's Later Than You Think. But it's not Lights Out. It's quite deep.
Yeah. From the creative mind of Willis Cooper, who was the actual creator of Lights Out.
Yes. And have we got yet another thing to learn?
We do.
Then let's get to it. Erie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story.
Yes, apologies to Gar and maybe the wrath of Sister Knucklebuster. Anyway, it's better It's better than a watch tell time and not make time. Unless it's a person, then it's better to make time. There you go.
No.
Don't see Sister Knucklebuster, not Knucklebuster yet, so we're okay, I guess.
Yeah. She's always hovering about, though. We've got to watch ourselves.
She is. Yeah. She is. You know, I wish she'd at least, if she's going to hang around like that, I wish she'd at least pick up a broom once in a while or something, you know?
Yeah, and fly on out of here. We don't need our knuckles busted just for a little misbehavior.
Yep.
Suspenseful. And that's exactly what we're building up to, is something a little suspenseful here. Dave found some fun stuff to add to our show.
Yeah, about 40 of these out there we'll be able to sneak in from time to time. Back in the mid-1960s, when everything was really turning into an area where they have little features and radio personalities and disc jockeys that would go out on location and things like that. One of these features that I just recently found was Behind the Green Door, and it was a feature from 1966 featuring none other than the great Basil Rathbone. And we have one of these.
Linda Lovelace. Sorry.
No.
Different
Green
Door.
Different Green Door. Yeah. Anyway, that's what we have for you here to share tonight to kick things off with. Many of these to come down the road.
Yes. Many, many more. But this one featuring Basil. Oh, by the way, have we mentioned why even... I feel terrible. We haven't even mentioned why we're doing Garless Morals of the Story.
Yeah.
Gar is ailing. He has no voice. So we haven't heard.
I talked to him a few days ago, and I helped him dig up a video he was looking for. But after that, he kind of lost his voice. So to go with the pneumonia and everything else, the poor guy is fighting. So wow.
Yes, Basil. Yes, Basil. Basil.
Yeah.
Rathbone.
Yeah. I remember when he called on the Saturday night just to say the word Basil and then hung up.
Yes. Yeah, he was getting ready for his show, but he couldn't resist just yelling Basil at us.
Yep. So now we can let Basil speak for himself, I guess.
Yes, we can. And what's the title of the show?
Behind the Green Door.
Behind
Without
the Green
Linda.
Door. Without Linda. Yeah.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Basil Rathbone inviting you to join me beyond the Green Door.
John.
Our story today deals with Dr. Frederick Morton, a brave man of science who went forth to roll back the curtain of superstition and thus found himself beyond the Green Door. Chief Tikape was the last of the great Fijian kings. He ruled the island of Vanuatu, and his control was absolute. That was in 1910, and the authorities at Suva despaired of gaining any control over this island. When troops were landed at Vanuatu, they were ambushed in the jungle by Tikape and his brawny warriors. All were killed on the spot, except for three men of exceptional courage who were sent to the cooking ovens. Tikape was a cannibal like all his ancestors, and he believed that to eat a brave man was to confer his virtues on the eater, a rude form of magic and quite horrible to contemplate. A second landing party was also wiped out, this time by captured Martini Henry rifles, and their matters rested. By 1912, Tikape had heard of the wonders of civilization from far-wandering Fijian traders. These men told of the marvels to be seen in Suva, lights which burned without oil, wagons that propelled themselves, boats which blew white smoke. Not believing a word of it, Tikape sent a deputation to Suva to see and report, which they did. Then Tikape went to Suva himself, under government immunity, to see what civilization could bring him. That fierce old warrior was impressed by the white man's might. He returned to his island and thought the whole thing over. At last, to the amazement of the authorities, he sent a messenger to Suva, declaring himself ready to learn the white man's ways. Some officials couldn't believe that this ferociously independent man was ready to change his habits, but others pointed out Tikape's exceptional intelligence and the fact that he had never gone back on his word. Accordingly, a teacher was sent to distant Vanuatu. The man who volunteered to go was Dr. Frederick Morton, a brave and learned scientist. Morton was sure that he could prove the advantages of civilization, and he went fully equipped with ingenious goods. Morton was taken straight to the chief, who embraced him and welcomed him to Vanuatu. Old Tikape declared that his interest in science was genuine and abiding, and with tears in his eyes, he thanked Morton for coming. Morton replied with a graceful speech, saying that he wished for nothing more than the enlightenment of Tikape and his people. "This is a very great and wise man," Tikape told his men. "This is a man who must be treated with the utmost respect and courtesy. Therefore, lead him very gently and with honor due his rank to the oven." The warriors respectfully dragged Morton away, that great martyr of the Southwest Pacific, and Tikape sat back with a nod of satisfaction. He knew that the eating of a brave man conferred courage upon the eater, so quite obviously the eating of a wise man would transfer his wisdom. And while the oven was heating, Tikape suddenly remembered the authorities. So he collected several valuable carvings and sent them to Suva to show his gratitude to the government which had sent him this great man of science.
Jolly little tune there at the end.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night, what, we got more radio or something?
No.
Oh, that's right. It's a radio drive-in and time travel.
A radio drive-in. Woohoo!
Yeah. It's Lux Radio Theater. I'll never forget you. It's a time travel story. Trust us. And that's tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern right here on Erie House. And internet willing, yep. I'll have the ads up tomorrow morning. and links and all that fun stuff, so you can just jump right in here and join us. On Erie House.
And get well, Gar.
Yeah, will you already? Oh, well, I missed our regular outro, Dave. We're going to have to do something just a tad different on the way out the door. A little late for Vincent.
Show starts in 3 minutes.
No,
you don't.
No.
Arrivederci.
Hasta la vista. Adios. Adios, muchachos. Caballeros. Will you get out of here?
I guess we will. Bye.
Bye.
Got carried away there. We ran out of time, but it was fun.
That's okay.
That's
what do you think
okay.
of that little featurette? They got some cool stories in there. I've listened to a couple of them, so.
Oh, I like it. That's gonna just add more and more material for either in times of need or to fill, you know, to round out a category. Oh my God, the uses are endless.
Yep.
Endless, I say.
Except in the end, yeah.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I love time travel stories. What was the other one? Sliders? There was that one. Oh, gosh. Or was that Sliders with the guy, and he had kind of a mentor guy that would jump through time with him?
Yeah, his professor. His professor's a girlfriend and just a guy who was a singer. So, yeah. They went from dimension to parallel dimension to parallel dimension. It was really cool.
I watched
But they should have stopped
show.
when the professor left. The professor was the guy who was in Indiana Jones. He was that guy who was assisting Indy.
Oh.
He showed up in the last film, and he was in the first one, maybe first two. He was not in the third one or the fourth one.
Yeah.
But he did come back for the last one, so.
Yeah, I watched it. It was so-so.
It was okay. I found it interesting, the CGI making him young was very interesting.
Yeah, it was. And that wasn't too bad. There were times you could tell that isn't quite natural.
Yeah.
But it's just like CGI.
Yeah.
AI, CGI, EIEIO. Just beware of them robots, I'm telling you right now. Can't be letting them doing all the thinking for us.
Yeah. All I know is I don't think they could write a weird and this really bad movie script. The way my brain works, it could not duplicate that.
No. And I was thinking about stuff like that. And I have this to say. This is my bit of wisdom for the after party.
Okay.
When you conform completely, you become less because it's your individuality that makes you different. If you're just like everybody else, who's going to miss you? Think about that.
Well, Dale, it's you and I definitely don't fit into that conforming category, do we?
Not in every way. No, I mean, there's certain things we like to think of as quote unquote normal. Just we ain't one of them.
Yeah, that's true.
we happen to know what more normal is. We just have opted this mindset or lack thereof. Who knows?
Yep.
But I get the biggest kick, you know, I always have wanted to make people laugh and to share things that I think are cool. And this has been really cool, Dave. This has been a hell of a ride.
It really has. It really has. Go ahead.
I can't imagine anybody who has the scope of knowledge of radio that you do. I bet you could count those people on one hand. Mm-hmm.
Well, if only I remembered what I always knew, but you know, sometimes it just pops up and it kind of helps the situation a little. But I'm always also looking and reading, like this bit on Carl Malden. I'll have to see if I can find enough programs that he did that we could have a Carl Malden weekend or something.
Yeah,
because it's just something. You know, the last thing you think of when you think of Carl Malden is
his radio.
Radio.
His
radio.
Yeah, you can't see his nose. You know, it's
that's right. You know.
Oh, so it won't be distracting.
And he can't see past it. That's the other part of it, you know?
Yeah. No, but, I mean, anybody like that. I love it when we theme stuff up. There's so many different ways where you can go with that. And we don't have too many recurring themes. Certainly time travel and time change is one. We can't help that happens every year.
Yeah.
Really twice a year, the time change in general.
Well, even, you know, because sometimes there's lots of stories within a category, you know, and just like I'm working on one. Actually, I just need to type it in. I have one on how Erie House is going to hold everybody hostage for the weekend. So it's all about hostages. We've never done a theme like that before. So
that's right. That's it. We're holding you hostage.
Yep, we're holding you hostage.
I like that. I like that idea. Oh, there's so many good things coming up. So many good things.
There are.
Dave scheduled us through. And it's like, it's never written in stone. You never know when you're going to stumble on a great guest or just come
up
with a brainstorm. Yep.
Yep.
Or some event around us. And we're inching closer and closer. We're about 5 weeks away from the Flintstone weekend. That's going to be fun.
Yep. Well, that's something you mentioned, I think, back in August, and I finally did the research to put it all together. So that's really cool. I'm looking forward to that one, too. I know you're going to be digging out the sound bites for that one.
Who? Widow old me?
Yep. Yep. Widow old you.
Yeah. Sometimes it's fun to search for certain ones that you recall. You just don't remember hearing them in the mainstream or even the offstream. It obscure stuff. But I see, and this is what it started with me with stuff like that is when I first started DJing, was digging up the one-hit wonders from like the – all right, so I started in like the mid-'80s. I started DJing for a living. And that was my first niche, was doing an oldies night and playing a lot of the one-hit wonders from like the 60s and 70s. Songs you didn't hear on the radio anymore, but once you heard them, it's like, oh, God, I haven't heard that in years. And I love that reaction from people, you know?
Yeah.
I still periodically will hear stuff that, oh, my God, I haven't heard in ages.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the same thing with sound bites. You know, there's certain memories we have for certain shows, you know, like the Swedish chef from the Muppets, like all kinds of things. They're iconic. They're burned into our psyche from a shared experience of television programs of our youth or radio programs or both.
Yeah.
And whatever was pop culture at the time.
One of the things we knew that bought from our horror host that brought in clips from Stan Freberg and from Bill Cosby and from all the different places that they pulled these clips from to be little sound bites within their shows, you know?
That's why
kids today don't even really watch television, you know?
Nah. Nope. Why? When you can, I don't know. Who knows? Live in a virtual world, running around with the goggles, pretending they're rabbits or something. Who knows?
Okay.
Kids are crazy. I tell you, keep them off my lawn.
Yep.
Stay off my lawn, kids. No. Or you'll get licked by a collie.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. He loves everybody, this dog. He has not met anybody he doesn't like yet, or that he's like wanted to steer clear of.
But the dog would sense if there was somebody that was not supposed to be doing something they weren't supposed to do, your dog would know.
Oh, yeah. They are. The thing is, they're not guard dogs. But they're great watchdogs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They don't have aggression in them, but I truly believe they would defend. That's exactly what a herding dog does. They guide, but they also defend the flock.
Yeah. I had a mutt, and she was the happiest dog you might ever meet. She was just always great to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Except one time my ex-wife walks into the house and she was listening. It's all I could do to hold her back. And she backed out and left and never came to my house again, which I was grateful for. Thanks.
Oh, somebody got extra treats.
thank you, Ruff. Yes.
A job well done, pup. Job well
That's
done.
That's right. That's right.
Too funny. Oh, my God. That is priceless. Dave, that is
and just shocked. I mean, and it's all I could do to hold her back. It was just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Good. Oh, yeah. You'd be getting treated. Here, let me defrost you a steak, puppy.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, gosh. It was, you know, when you're in a marriage that doesn't work, it's like the coyote in a trap. I will chew my leg off to get away. I will do it.
Yeah. Yep, yep. Well, with that, I think I need to go knock on a door and bring in the great one.
Yes, the schnoz a little more elegant than Carl Malden's.
A little bit more, yes, and far funnier as well. So, as we turn off the house lights and turn off the three spotlights, it's time to bring to center stage the one and only Jimmy Durante.
Yeah, give me a minute to get to the piano.
Ooh, well,
good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to
good night. TFM.
Good night.
Silly day.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Toodaloo.
Horrible, up we the same. And
think-a-doo.
Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
One night only in Upper Sandusky, which is lower than Sandusky, but it's still Upper Sandusky.
It is. Or as some of us say, Sandusky. This show has been...
do you mind turning off the radio?